Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelly.
And so we're live on December 16, 2022, allegedly according to that thing we call a calendar, and this is indeed the O'Shelly Effect. And most likely, if you found this show, you were looking for it, so thank you. You're probably catching it further on down the stream and all that good stuff. And as I speak, I am just delayed a bit on podcasts, but that's because I've been a touch distracted past few days. And we're going to get into that in the next few minutes with my special guest, because normally on Fridays, Friars Day, I do an open call-in show, but we did it last night instead because I wanted to get it out of the way and give at least a day to the individuals that we all know, if you listen to this show, are going to be digging into the latest document dump. Okay. And yes, I'm still happy with calling it a document dump into the JFK Records collection. I know that this is not fascinating to some listeners, but I also know I got a lot of feedback right away that they were very anxious to hear what Larry Hancock had to say, and people have been pressing me for questions, and you need to do a show about it, you need to do a podcast about it. Well, here it is. So I have the author of many books, including In Denial, which you hear commercials for on here. Of course. Well, Creating Chaos, great book we've covered, unfortunately, I don't know, 20 times on this show, because we had to. Okay, well, Shadow Warfare, Surprise Attack, Someone Would Have Talked, Killing King is, yeah, it's one of those books. It's not the Bill O'Reilly thing, but I think it's Killing King. Anyway, that's with Stu Wexler. But, you know, Stu is a great author in his own right, American Jihad, all that, but he's not here today, so we're not talking about his book. But he's also participated in a couple other writings with Larry Hancock, and The Awful Grace of God. Look, there is not a single book out there in the Larry Hancock collection, which I did entire shows on and a series on, and we're going to replace that sucker, even though it's lost off of YouTube. We're going to put it back up on BitChute, just so you know. So the Larry Hancock collection of shows will be re-released, and geez, Larry, you're the only author that I did that with. So there's a reason for it. Highly responsible. I mean, I call him historian. I don't know if technically he is, but he is an incredibly informative and intelligent author who can explain intelligence to you. The behavior of the national security state, the behavior of other national security states, regarding all sorts of things, well, maybe focused on the JFK assassination, but other times focused on things like, I don't know, what do they call them now? UAPs, right. In a book called Unidentified, and believe me, we're going to hear more about that in the coming months, because I've been very privileged to have Larry Hancock with me, larry-hancock.com, go there. Check out his stuff, buy his books wherever you can. And, yeah, great to have him along with us, and exactly the guy that I need to talk to about this huge amount, another huge amount of stuff that has been released into the JFK Records collection. So, Larry, that was a longer introduction than usual, but this is going to be an unusual day. You're on an hour earlier, for starters, and secondly, we are actually going to focus on the JFK case tonight, which we've never done that before, right? No, I know we have.
But it's been a while, yeah, though.
It's been a while, though. Mm-hmm. So, Larry, let's just start off with the most general sort of, I don't know, the question that's been in my email, on my Skype, and in Twitter messages, on Facebook, in the past 24 hours, several dozen times. Okay. And I'll just leave it wide open to your interpretation. What is it you think about the documents, Larry? Hurry up. Tell us an answer.
Let's see. Let's start going by riff numbers. That'll help. Let's do a document by document. Now, I think that the fascinating thing about it is that this document release shows how badly, maybe badly is not the word, it's to what extent you can be fooled by numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at the White House statement, and if you look at the CIA statement, it looks like they did dump, release, post, have no access availability to a lot of documents. And they did. You know, you go, well, this is really substantial. This is the biggest number I've seen in a long time, et cetera. So you would think it was something significant. And frankly, it's easy to fool people like that. If you're not familiar with the documents themselves, if you don't have a history with them, now that we've had a day or so to take a look and at least do some sampling, what I would call this is a re-release.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a new document dump. It is a re-release of documents, almost all of which we have seen before in one or more iterations. We've seen almost all of them in 2017, a lot of them in 2021. My buddy David Boylan has been posting on some documents, and I'll go, yeah, this is interesting, and look, they unredacted one word.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look, there's one name we didn't see before. Look in this document, they unredacted this word, and it says liaison.
Yeah.
That was pretty critical. I understand why they, you know, that's a national security thing, liaison. But I saw those documents back in the 2005, when I was writing Someone Would Have Talked. Those documents were available from NARA then. They weren't necessarily online. You had to go there and get them and review them. So people that don't have that history might go, oh, gosh, golly, this is new. This is big news.
Well, let me interrupt you for a second. let me interrupt you for a second here, because I was, you know, asked about this last night and did talk about it a little bit on the open call-in show, because whatever people want to talk about, I'll talk about. And obviously, I'd only had a couple hours to have even looked at any of this stuff. So they wanted my first take, you know. And frankly, I started having to explain to them that, yeah, there is a giant deception here in the numbers. The statements that came out through the press, and maybe we're going to get to the press issue first. I was going to save it for later, but I think it's appropriate that we talk about it now, if you don't mind, because the way that they presented it to the general public, who are not going to even do the due diligence of going to see what it is they're talking about. After all, it is, you know, according to some reports, immediately it was 12,000 and something. Other reports said over 13,000. There's a reason for the discrepancy in those numbers. But forget that. That's minutia. It sounds like, and they presented it as immediately, within a couple of hours, that they had released almost everything that we have been asking for now. And okay, there is the characterization of that, and we can talk about where that came from. But firstly, let us understand that various times over the years, not even in just the past few years, there have often been instances where different documents have been released more than once. And sometimes it is because, let's just say, a memo is generated and it's sent to three different agencies. So we might indeed end up with the FBI's copy of this. And then we end up with just pulling it out of thin air, the Secret Service's copy of this. And they may be redacted differently by each of these agencies. And therefore, you end up, you know, okay, here's the Secret Service version, here's the FBI version, here's the White House's version of it. And they might all be different, and they might have chosen to redact things in one document that were not redacted in another, and you literally have to assemble a puzzle piece, you know, like a jigsaw puzzle. Well, this looks like this fits here, this looks like it fits there, and if you do, you come up with a general idea, but there may be consistencies as well, like a specific name is blacked out in all of them, things like this. Or a whole page is blacked out in one, but half of it is not blacked out in another. And I know this sounds like, you know, I'm probably putting Larry to sleep here. But I was explaining to them, if you haven't done this yourself, then you don't know what I'm talking about, because we've had to do this in various iterations, and this stuff wasn't always available online, or it was available online only because Rex Bradford, gave many years of his life, scanning pages. You know, I mean, look, that's the Mary Farrell Organization. It's the largest online repository, right, of this kind of documentation. And literally, Rex was scanning it in each individual page at a time for years. Okay? So, you know, again, salute to Rex for doing so. Anyway, and the Mary Farrell collection in the first place. But okay. So that happens all the time. Not just with JFK stuff, but anytime you have these requests for records, but especially with the JFK document collection, which is voluminous to begin with. I believe we're well over 5 million documents in the collection at this point in time. I may be a little off, but I believe we're there. And, you know, the fact that they say they gave us 13,000, you know, out of 15,000, it does sound as though they nearly gave all of it to us. But the problem is you might have the duplication of documents. The fact that, yes, indeed, one word has now been unredacted that previously had a black splotch over it, and so on and so forth. So is my characterization of this, as I slowed it down, I'm sorry, but I just was trying to come up with it off the top of my head to explain that I had already seen that this was not just, you know, in one document or a handful of documents, but already just by scanning it and my awareness of the previous stuff that had been released, that was a big issue here. And am I accurate with the way I'm characterizing this and explaining it step by step? What do you think?
No, that's accurate. And that particular issue has always been a problem with how the media was able to handle it. Another example, I think, Chuck, even a more fundamental example, is obviously over a span of decades, now we're close to, you know, 2-3 decades into real, you know, document releases since the JF Record Act, the ARB. It's not, you're not necessarily dealing with the same staff person at an agency who does redactions every time. Often it's left to junior people. There's no hard and fast rule as to what you I mean, in some cases, yeah, we don't put names in, we don't put whatever, but in terms of other information, there are no hard and fast rules. And one of the things that we saw in 2017, a document release in 2017, okay? Well, what had happened is a document that had been released earlier, let's say in the, you know, let's say 2008, something like that, that had been released directly from, as part of the Records Act release, someone had redacted something. And then someone took a second look at it and said, oh, that doesn't need to be redacted. And it got issued again.
Right.
A third person later on looked at it and said, oh, well, that needed to be redacted. In fact, there are a couple of lines that need to be redacted. So we would go in and find a document online that actually had more information at one point in time than another. And it would change, you know, but every time they did that, it was counted as a release. So if you really total up the numbers and considering how many documents have been redacted, unredacted, and re-redacted, total it all up, it would be a huge number. Right. But that really doesn't count. And you can see how that would mislead any people. I am absolutely convinced the CIA in particular has managed to mislead like the White House. I mean, if they tell the White House, I've released this, you know, thousands of new documents, how can anybody know? How can the National Security Council know? If you're not familiar with the grunt level detail of the documents, they're just giving you a number. You put it in a memorandum and the news media repeats it.
Well, I will say that I haven't run across some of the stuff that I had run across in the early 2000s and in the 90s, which, by the way, you know, people like me did go ahead and order documents based on what it is we thought we could find, based on the way they were labeled, et cetera, okay? And I ended up with stuff, and my favorite example is a badly cut out newspaper article that I must have gotten 7 copies of, okay? And the reason for it was that this ended up in a, like, say, a committee comes together, okay? And this happened many different times, but it was so frustrating because I'm like, this was previously classified. It's a publicly available news article. But because it was in the folder of someone who was being informed on a committee, not just the HSCA or anything, by the way, but I mean, let's just say, and not just the Warren Commission, but if there were, say, 6 or 7 people as part of a panel learning something, and someone made a presentation to them and brought a newspaper article in, that was badly cut out and made photocopies. Now you have one of those in each one of these persons' like note files, and you'll end up with them because, and it's the same article over and over again.
Another example of that, Chuck, is really bad in the FBI, is the FBI would accumulate reports from different field offices.
Yep.
And it's the same information. So I can remember, you know, page by page for a 50-page FBI document, and when I get it, it's like it's the same three pages over and over and over again.
Right, because the field office in Chicago generates a report. I'm picking out of thin air here, by the way. I'm not even saying this is a specific example. They generate a 302 or some kind of set of notes. All right, so the people in Florida ask for it because it's connected in some way to some case. They transmit it to them. Now the people in Florida have it. It's also transmitted to Washington. Okay, because somebody's doing a search for somebody's name, it comes up on these notes. Now maybe somebody in California got it. All right? Now, they may have filed this in different ways, and you're getting the same set of notes from different places in the country, and it originated in Chicago. It's relevant to there. But because it was relevant to XYZ other investigations, the very same set of notes, which might not even be relevant entirely, but happens to mention somebody, okay, is now in 5, 6, 8 places, right? Like that thing in the 2017 release where, you know, there were certain people in certain media circles, not going to name names, that tried to make a big deal out of, we have a report in the documents that they were holding back, that there were shots from the front. Now, you or I might be very interested in that. It might be very interesting to the public. It might be the kind of thing that, quite frankly, they're going to put on CNN so they can destroy it. But if it's a set of notes as opposed to a standardized report, and you have a situation, I think you know what I'm referring to here, where an FBI agent was told something, they made a note of it, that's all there is to it. You don't know exactly when this happened. You don't know the subject's name even. A whole bunch of things went on here. And then the documents sort of abruptly seemed to end where it appeared to be incomplete. And what it comes down to is a giant waste of time because all you have is an FBI agent making a note about an account that he was told. Not even during an interview, not during something that was documented, not as part of the formal investigation necessarily, but it was just a point of collection here. And it's not that relevant because do we know who this person was, where they were at the time, did they actually witness it? None of that's laid out in this document because, again, it's just notes, right? So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And yeah, that is of interest. I get it, but it's not that interesting in that it's very easy to dismiss it. And I dismissed it because it was like, look, I don't know who this is, what this means. This is just somebody's notes. And I mean, you could easily find that somebody in the FBI has taken, and by the way, I've seen this in a file, has taken a note that, you know, an individual claimed to be Jesus Christ. That doesn't mean that that's relevant to anything. They just noted that someone said this. Okay. Probably a mentally disturbed individual, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not even relevant. It's kind of a crazy sounding statement. And there were many of these things in FBI files because, as with a lot of things that make huge headlines, right? We talked about this before. Lee Harvey Oswald was cited in probably 900 places. You know, the day he died, right? Because people thought they saw him, or they were making up a story, or they had a story about something that happened a couple of weeks ago, and all that stuff got collected, but because it wasn't properly organized into an interview, it just becomes a floating set of nonsense, almost. Where, I mean, if you lay it all together, you've got Lee Harvey Oswald showing up, like, in almost every state of the Union, while he's in prison. In Texas, not in prison, but in jail, in Texas. You know, they're writing it down because it was a piece of information that was transmitted to them. But it doesn't necessarily mean it was investigated. It doesn't mean that they, you know, in some cases they did. They looked into stuff. Oswald was here, you know, 2 days ago. You know, okay, well, how did he get from Alaska to Texas? You know, so on and so forth, right?
I think, again, that's something else that makes it a challenge, not only for the system to handle. I mean, who's going to question what's in the FBI reports? FBI reports are what they are, and that's what the Bureau does. I mean, quite frankly, is in most cases collect information, good, bad, or indifferent. That's what CIA's domestic ops does. A lot of what they do is just raw collections, and it goes into memos. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't know what segments, you know, if you want to get into the inter-office communications between the FBI station chief and headquarters, okay, that's another kind of document. Mm-hmm. Or if you want to get into the weekly sit rep from head of ops at JM Wave to headquarters, that's another kind of document. But all of these things are jumbled together as if they were equally meaningful or equally true, and they're really not.
Well, right. Just like when you see a memo which memorializes something that amounts to a briefing in any intelligence circles, right? That is of a different level of significance than, say, all of these notes we've been talking about, where, look, after a while, somebody decided that this information needed to be transmitted to whoever, whether it's the president being briefed or, you know, the head of a particular office or someone who is in charge of, like, you see those titles, right? Here's the guy that's in charge of anti-terrorism. Well, that guy is going to be briefed by a certain individual, and the information that was vetted to get that far in the communication chain is a little different from the random collection. It carries a different bit of weight, gives you indications of things. They're not going to bring them every single random piece of information possible, right? It doesn't necessarily mean they were told everything, as we've well learned before, for various reasons, right? Like, for instance, trying to even cover the circumstance where Hostie's destroying a document. We know that for certain. You know, there's a point at which, yeah, we know he destroyed a document, but taking a look at who actually ordered that, why that occurred, what the circumstances of it was, is this just a CYA situation? There's a whole lot of things you got to examine to try and nail that down. Regardless of the story he was telling, which I believe for the most part, by the way. But, you know, the idea that there might have been a note and all this, okay. We've gone into the weeds. Let's go back to the issue at hand, because I just wanted to give people a feel for the amount of, well, processing that is necessary here in order to get at, okay, I found something of significance. I found something even new in any way, shape, or form. You know, because you have to be able to go back and look, is this already out there? We might have something with even greater redactions on it now, as opposed to the way it was 5 years ago, because change in staff, etc. And there's another thing here too, just real fast, that always stumps people. Okay, which is, there was a certain point where some things were declassified, and then their classification status changed. And we do actually have a circumstance where there was, you know, you now have in your possession, because you and I used to have paper files, I know that. You know, today, again, access it through the internet, that's great, but when you had your paper files, you and I might have been in possession of things that have now been reclassified and are no longer legal for somebody to be holding them in their hands, right? Because now that's a classified document. Classification might have changed. Different things like that have happened, and it becomes relevant to redactions too, because again, like you said, there's not a perfectly set standard for exactly what should be redacted anyway. And you do end up with, we released
it. Embarrassing, Chuck. Mm-hmm. In one of my books, I wrote two or three chapters relating to Central and Latin America and Africa. around a lot of State Department documents. Mm-hmm. Most of them relate to Henry Kissinger, his time there. After the book was published, I went back and learned that apparently Kissinger himself had had all those documents reclassified and taken off the State Department website. Like, wait a minute, I know I saw those. Here's a link. You know I saw it, but it's gone.
Right. So that happens too. So, and then, just as a follow-on, and I'm not trying to exhaust you on this, Larry, really I'm not, because I want to get into, really getting into the specifics of what it is we're able to see here. But first I felt it was necessary to lay out the groundwork, okay? And we're going to get into the media coverage a little more, but first, here, last thing. So something's been reclassified, like you described in this situation. Give it five more years. And guess what might happen? It might change again. Yes, Kissinger personally goes in and changes it or whatever, but because of some other FOIA, some other circumstance, some other change, or some other staff member sees it, boom, it's back out again. Right? So this is not like a hard and fast situation where it's like we absolutely know all the time. It's impossible to actually know all the time. And here's the funny thing. If you or I were able to keep our files in perfect order and go to contact the National Archives and say, listen, I'm a document researcher, or I'm a historical researcher of some kind, whatever it is you want to say. And gentlemen, I would like to be in full compliance with the law. So I would like to either destroy or return to you documents which I have previously obtained from you, which are now no longer legal, or I am unclear as to whether their legal status is open to the public or not. And therefore, I want to be sure that I do not violate any national security issues here. If you wanted to be in full compliance and you contacted the National Archives, I'll tell you what, Larry, what would they say to me if I did that?
Well, there would be a lot of head shaking. Mm-hmm. And I mean, ultimately, I think they would be challenged because they do not keep every interim version of every document.
Mm-hmm.
They should be able to look at their files and tell you the current status of a document. Uh-huh. And actually, I've done that before.
Mm-hmm.
So they should be able to answer your question, but I very much doubt they'd be able to give you any history. Kind of like if you then go, well, why is it classified now and I have a copy of it? They would just, say, sir, I just need to, you said you wanted to be in compliance. Here's the deal. I really don't necessarily think they have a history.
No, they don't. And here's the funny part. In some instances, I'll tell you what they tell you. Because how do I know? Been told. Due to the nature of that document, I cannot answer that question. Because
I am redacted.
They are, almost like a living redaction, where they are not able to answer a question about it because it's classified. That's basically what they told you without saying it. It's now classified. They can't even tell you. So that, and it's not their fault. Okay. It's just this is the nature of what we're dealing with. So by the time we get to a situation here where, again, only nearly 60 years and many different changes and different releases, we could potentially be looking at a lot of stuff here that has been released already. And yet they can still make these claims like they did in the mainstream articles. Okay. So I'm going to get to those mainstream articles after we take a break at about the half hour mark here, which we're very close to. But, your first impressions of this particular set of documentation. Mine is pretty simple. I can run it off really quick, but I'm clearly not done. This is not something you can do instantaneously. I've just tried to give people a taste of the complexity contained in, well, I've read it, I know what's in it, that's the end of it. No. Okay. And that's not even without getting it. That's not even with getting into the particulars on, do you understand how this was transmitted, what this means, what the office was, all those things in order to understand what the document is, right? just because you have the right document in your hand doesn't mean you understand what you're reading. And you and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, the evolution of the understanding of these things. And how, you know, we didn't know so many years ago that maybe this meant this, and so on and so forth. And that's without even getting into that. Already trying to figure out what it is you have been handed in the first place is difficult. But Larry Hancock, enough of my opinion and about how I tried to explain this and how, yeah, it sounds impressive and, you know, and I'll get into the NBC article after the break, but because I want to read from it. It seems as though everybody got the NBC article for some reason. All your news feeds featured it, and I think it's actually the most concise statement, you know, maybe from people that were informed by government agencies that I've seen out there in the corporate media. So we're going to use it as the exemplar, if you will, of the statement that has already come out ahead of anything, even from Mary Farrell, the Mary Farrell Organization, Larry Hancock, Jefferson Morley, Rex Bradford. Ahead of all of us, they seem to have their story together. But we'll talk about that in the second, after the break, in the second segment here. Your first impressions generally, like, Larry, what do you think of the documents? I know it's an unfair question, but what would you say to that? And then I think we'll go to a break.
I think it's an easy answer in regard to the CIA section. There are some areas that are new to us. For example, in tracking what's available in the archives, mm-hmm. We were not aware of any NSA documents there that had not been released. Mm-hmm. There appear to be a bunch of releases of NSA documents. When I say a bunch, dozens at least.
One quick interruption here. The NSA, just for the audience to understand, and I mean, it doesn't matter if you're a researcher or not, I want you to understand that the NSA has been, I would say hands down, the most resistant of the government agencies that were involved in being requested, you know, and having records requests for the ARRB, and in general, the NSA is very difficult to deal with as far as, you know, we want your documentation. They don't give that up easily. Very strange, very tough, and obviously very key to understanding the way things are transmitted and communications and a lot of other stuff, as we have well learned, you know, via the Snowden thing and everything else. But the NSA is a particularly interesting thing to me. I just want you to know, because they are so extremely stingy, let's say, with what it is that they will release, even when we think that they're being compelled by law, by FOIAs, everything else. They're very difficult. You think I'm right or wrong in characterizing it that way?
Oh, I think you're right, Chuck, but I would say it's fairly understandable, because the majority of NSA is signals intelligence.
Right.
And signals intelligence depends on the location of your receiving facilities, your capabilities, your satellite if anybody has sources to protect, it's NSA.
And methods.
And methods, right. So mm-hmm. It's understandable to some extent that they would be harder nosed, and because their sources change over time.
Right.
I mean, as far as the CIA is concerned, it's like, okay, human intelligence or safe cracking. No, that's pretty much constant. Mm-hmm. But NSA does come up with new sources and radically new type of collections, you know, every few years.
And so they must change with the technology.
Yeah.
But here's the weird rub on that is that they appear, from what I've learned over the years, they appear to have a through line, a connectivity here where indeed a source and a method in the 1960s could still exist. It's not the same thing as human intelligence, where eventually human assets die. They're gone. And, you know, connectivity, the way people connect, might have changed in human intelligence. But when it comes to communications, listen, we still have radio signals, don't we? We still have. So some of those methodologies that have remained hidden might still need to be remain in the dark, because they might still exist. The NSA actually has, and I hate to even say this, actually has a reasonable argument about protecting methodology, because some of those things, as much as technology changes, some of those things might have simply been adapted into the new ecosphere of communications. And if you were to release, without paying very close attention, you could give away something that is currently relevant. I can reasonably understand that there could still be radio receiver places or whatever that existed in the 60s that still exist now. Let's, go with the simplest example. But guaranteed, there's other stuff there that might actually reveal things that are current. I actually understand that argument a lot more than I do from the CIA and a lot of these other organizations, which have obviously had to abandon certain things. So as much as they have the argument that they've had to adapt and change, and therefore new sources, new methods would be different, yes, they might still be incorporating the old ones. And that might be something that lasts a lot longer than human assets, than business assets, etc. Or am I talking crazy here?
That exists at an additional level. Mm-hmm. NSA actually has intelligence exchange agreements with other nations that are entirely different than what the CIA has. The CIA is very competitive. NSA and signals intelligence, we have a group of partners that we actually do share information with much more effectively than the CIA does, including the British. And so that's also something that has to be, you're not just talking about individuals as sources or a particular transmitter as a source. You're talking about another foreign agency as a source. And actually, we did compromise during the early Al-Qaeda days with some of the things that we did to track down the terrorist. We actually got signals information from the British as far as sources in the Middle East, and we used that, and in doing so, we compromised their sources. Mm-hmm. So it's really tricky because it's not only a matter of compromising your own sources, it's a matter of potentially compromising your allies' sources.
Well, right. And the compartmentalization is entirely different. Like, a lot of people think about the CIA obviously does cooperate with, people like the War on Terror. There was clearly CIA cooperation with, say, the ISI and agencies like that. Sure. And the funny thing is we know about a lot of that stuff. But frankly, it's on a whole other level with the NSA. So a good point that it would not only just be a compromise to our national security, but it could be you could endanger allies. You could endanger situations where enemies are not fully aware of certain cooperative levels that would become obvious if you literally released some of the documentation, even as far back as that. So I understand the resistance, but same time, it's just one of those things. Anyways.
So in regard to your question, there's some areas, NSA, INS, State Department, that we haven't had a chance to look at yet. There may be something new there. It may not be. I mean, quite frankly, up to this point, we've focused on the CIA's, and I think what I can honestly say is this release from the CIA is bogus.
Right.
It is a re-release. Someone has consciously pick stuff that was already released, lifted a couple of redactions, or in some case, comparison shows no change at all from the last version we had, and dumped it, put it in as part of the dump to boost the numbers. The numbers in terms of new information are extremely misleading. What they have also done is they've been very selective, and to date, if anything, I've seen one what I think is a new document, and it relates to surveillance. It's a situations report out of Mexico City on surveillance. Very extensive document, excellent document, very educational. But it's for one particular point in time. Now, if you read that document, you immediately go, everybody in the CIA, including David Phillips, we thought they lied to us, and yes, they lied to us, because the camera systems are working, there's no report of any problem with them, everything seemed, but they didn't give us the other routine weekly and monthly documents that should have been in that series. So where are they? We know this one document that they reported every week, they've released after 60 years. Mm-hmm. Why don't we have the rest of them? And I think that goes across the board. They are not addressing any of the holes that we know about. We now know a dozen places where we should see documents that mention Lee Oswald. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing suspicious about them. They're like, it should have been in a standard report but it's not there. I would be less suspicious if the CIA had actually released a few documents suggesting that Oswald, as well as, you know, 1,000 other people, were part of their routine intelligence collection. But they haven't done that. Mm-hmm. So, in particular, what's jumping out, I give an example so people can really relate to it.
Right.
Oswald came back to the United States from Soviet Russia. He went to Fort Worth. We know, and it would have been standard practice, nothing suspicious, that CIA domestic operations would have been intelligence with Oswald. That would have been interested in Oswald. You know, is he really a Russian plant? Is his wife a Russian plant? The FBI was concerned. There's no the CIA domestic ops was tracking him. And we know they were, because we know that they actually reached out to a fellow who was involved with the white Russian community, George de Morenshield. De Morenshield talks about having been contacted by J. Walton Moore about Oswald, about briefing. Anyway, the point is, here's a domestic ops guy doing his regular day job, nothing suspicious, nothing reeking of conspiracy. Yet we have not a single document relating to Moore that talks about what de Morenshield told him or any of his other sources told him. There should be totally benign mentions of Oswald in his documents, and we don't have anything like that. Mm-hmm. So it's beginning to become more and more obvious, and it raises the question, Chuck. I think what the CIA is doing is they're feeding actually conspiracy speculation because of these holes, mm-hmm. that they're not filling in, any of the holes that wouldn't make them look bad. It would make them just like they look like they're doing their job.
Right.
But so, are they not releasing them because there's something to hide, or are they not releasing them because they were destroyed 60 years ago?
Well, there is yet another answer as to why they're not releasing them, is because it serves the purpose of continued speculation. I mean, just that purpose in and of itself, as opposed to answering the question, which in and of itself might be benign, but could possibly lead us in another direction, because what they've learned over the years is, in some cases, some of this crap that really nobody seemingly, you know, here we go, where the Larry, I excuse me for saying this, but those of us that dig into this stuff are a little bit crazy, because the average person would not invest this amount of time, okay, into sorting this out. Almost like they want to exhaust us with a bunch of, you know, receipts to say, look, bills were paid. And assuming, you know, much like that, the old statement people like to point to, where somebody said, well, why did they release all the documents? Well, Alan Dulles said, nobody will read it anyway. You know, if you overwhelm people with a bunch of stuff, they're going to look at it and say, I don't want to read all this. This is just and a lot of people will. It is people like yourself. Okay. And me, that got to have a little bit of crazy in us, because we're willing to go through this and figure it out and piece it together. And I think they want to keep us busy with that as long as they can. And that's the conclusion that I started coming to. And I started saying to myself, now, but here's the question, and here's the thing that a lot of people are going to do to themselves trying to do this. Am I just seeing this because this is what I want to see? Or, you know, is there something else happening here? Maybe I don't see it, but it looked to me like you've just tried to shut everybody up, and you dumped a bunch of piles of paper on there. I mean, I was very much reminded of when Trump came out with his big folders about his businesses and was like, look at all this paper. Okay, now whatever you think of it, it's a very interesting visual tool, and it makes it appear as though I just gave you a whole lot of stuff. Now, I can't show it all to you, but I gave you a lot of stuff. And at the end of all that, what did you get? Actually, nothing. Except the illusion that you were given things. So that's where we're going to get into the media coverage and maybe what's partially informing that illusion. Because, again, at the press conference yesterday, Jefferson Morley made an interesting point, and I wanted to get your take on it because, look, I got my disagreements with Mr. Morley about a few things, but quite frankly, when he makes a hell of a point, he makes a hell of a point. And the idea that maybe, just maybe, off the record, certain people in the media might have been read into a situation by not being read into a situation and simply being told, look, you want the summary on this? Because nobody wants to read all this. It could have been presented just like that. You really want to know what's in here? Here's what's in here. And they take the outline and run with it because who wants to read 13,000 documents? Who? Except, you know, people like Larry and me. You know, eventually we're going to try to get to reading all this stuff, probably. And even within our own little community that does this, I guarantee you there's plenty of people who go, look, I've read this already. I've read this already. This is just a whole lot of nothing because we've been here already. We knew this already. And this thing that they redacted, we had already figured out that's what was under that redaction. So, you know, you're actually wasting our time. And are you doing it on purpose or is it because there is nothing else to present or is that merely the strategy, et cetera, et cetera? You know, because it is an informative strategy in war, in sports, and everything else. Sometimes it's good to just exhaust your opponent as opposed to literally confronting what it is they're coming at you with and dealing with it. You just let them wear themselves out. And frankly, you know, they have not won that battle because generationally, as I pointed out last night, people have continued one generation after another. So they haven't gotten rid of the opponent, so to speak, but they have worn a bunch of them out and people have, you know, passed on, have left us, have gone. And yet there are people continuing to do the work. So they can't get rid of all of us, but I think they're trying to keep exhausting us. Now, Larry, am I coming off like a crazy tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist here, or am I talking about the reality? What do you think? And then we'll go to a break.
Well, I think there's one other option, and sure. And the strange thing is, if we had a lot of continuity in personnel in the agency, mm-hmm. I would be more suspicious. But I'm not sure anybody in the agency really understands what's in the files now. I think they've already, having done some PR work, you know, like I think they have a strategy, and the strategy is always to get rid of this story as quickly as they can. And what I see is there's no sign that they're actually curating the releases in any way to deceive us. In fact, the more releases they do, the more these holes stand out. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to see a strategy. I think they do have a strategy, and the strategy, I think you probably characterized it correctly, is to come up with a story and a positioning that makes it look like the media has something to report. Mm-hmm. And then they meet with four or five mainstream media folks, which Jeff mentioned, and it's the best that we can tell is what happened. Matter mm-hmm. of fact, you know, they bring three CIA officers into a room with four major media people and give them the story, and that becomes the story.
Right.
And the major media people just report it. And I think you and I have talked about this, Chuck. It's the curse of news reporting versus investigative journalism. Mm-hmm. So it's easy for them to just get out a pitch, and the news gets reported for 24, 48 hours and goes away.
Right.
I think this time what they're beginning to see is the media isn't as unified and solid as it used to be, where with you know, half a dozen correct contacts, you created the whole story. There's a lot more fragmentation. But to answer your question, I think that's a very situational strategy. It's kind of like, oh, geez, the release date is coming up again. The president's staff is asking. We're going to have to do something. let's do it. Let's get it quick, and let's go back to our day job. Let's get over this.
Right. And even if it's not the perfect blanket it used to be with the influencers, and you could just, you know, okay, get somebody from ABC, NBC, CBS in here, and we're done. You know, it used to work perfectly, like an absolutely coherent blanket. But I think it's still very useful as a point of influence, because even the, alt media is going to report on what the mainstream narrative appears to be if it comes from multiple sources. And other multiple sources will grab it and parrot it. You know, how many times have you watched a CNN feed or listened to a CNN feed and you hear them tell you, well, this is what came out of the AP, this is what came out of NBC. So you go to NBC and you find out that they got it from another news source. And so on and so forth. I mean, it's a massive game of telephone still. Except, you know, now we got cell phone. So it's like cell phone instead of telephone. And it's relatively coherent and enough so that it appears as though there is a general narrative. And if it splinters and splits off, it's okay, but they still have a significant amount of control with that strategy of meeting with some key people. So we're going to get into that in the next segment. We're going to take a little break here and continue to talk about the document dump and maybe get into some other particulars. But again, sadly, it's not as useful as we would have liked it to be so far. But nobody, and I do mean nobody, no individual, no single individual, I guarantee, has been able to vet all of this stuff yet. But we're working on it. We're going to continue to do that. We're going to continue to talk to Larry Hancock, the great author and sober analyst of this kind of stuff here on the Ocelli Effect. Stick around.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Do you like history? Real history that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1960.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War
by author Mike Swanson.
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, she knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has the real Eckerd on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
Do you like history, real history, that you were never taught in schools.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before. That'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War
by author Mike Swanson.
Every time I put it on my face, I'm able to breathe just a little bit deeper.
What are people saying about MyTrueEssence.net?
I'm going to tell you something serious, man. I just want to tell you listeners, I bought some of that Modifilin from Christy, and she made me up some of this emu oil mixed with some other stuff. I don't know what's in it, but I like the way it smelled. And I started putting it on, rubbing it on my foot, rubbing it on my knee, and like the second day, I just noticed it. I'm walking around, I'm like, damn, my knee is loose.
But I can tell you that oil you gave me helped me with my carpal and my shoulder problem. And if it wasn't, I wouldn't be working.
My ankles started to really be pesky and bother me. And I'm telling you, the pain just went away. Essential oils rule!
And when I put that on, it's like my skin came alive.
MyTrueEssence.net.
News, entertainment, and more. You will learn something, children's. Ocelli.com.
Back for the second segment of this special Friday night Ocelli Effect. Now, we're not going to go a full 2 hours with Larry Hancock, I don't think, but let's see how it goes. I'm grateful to have him with me and to confirm what it is I personally am seeing in these document releases that occurred here yesterday. Because, man, you know, here we go again. It's a pile of you know, 12 or 13,000 things. That's for sure, that you can access on the internet and all that, and I encourage you to do so, but try and use the discernment and some of the hints that we've given you here tonight and the hints that others who are doing this with efficacy and with good intent to sort through it and understand what you're really looking at. Please, because here we go. I'm going to take the NBC News article, which has been sent to me repeatedly now and was referenced on the call-in show last night and seems to be the thing that is preferred in the news feeds out there, the Newsbreak app, etc. And it is the most coherent and concise version of what I think the MSM is presenting. And then I'm going to shut up and let Larry Hancock give you effectively the day one, really, progress report here as to what it is we're looking at. Now, could there be gems in these documents? I guess, but I am not encouraged thus far. I haven't even gone to the NSA stuff yet, which, as Larry said, you know, look, we're not sure about that. And quite honestly, we weren't even expecting it. So what could be expected later? Well, it's not just the little amount that's left that they say that's left. You know, there's only a few things left, guys. Not at all. There are many things that have yet to be collected and are not being numerically accounted for that were requested. There are a great many things that could be requested to be collected, which have not been. There's a whole long way to go. But let's go with the MSM version of this. The people that don't deep dive it but might have an interest, what they might turn to get an impression of what happened yesterday. And this is, again, from NBCNews.com. And you know what? I'm going to share the article. And I briefly looked in the chat room And I'm not going to go into all of what's going on in there. You guys, we could have had many deep dives, and guaranteed we'll be able to in the very near future on all this stuff. I mean, even whether Oswald was drinking a Coke, etc. Fine. No problem. We'll go there. But not today, because I just want this overall progress report from Larry. And the next time I get you on, Larry, I might ask some more particulars about what you see, and I obviously will have time to maybe find some more particulars myself, et cetera. And who knows, much smarter people than me will certainly come up with something out of this, I hope. But I don't know. Let's go to the general sort of... What are the people that don't read all the books? What are the people that don't study all the films? What are the people that don't go to the conferences? What are they getting fed about this? Again, NBCNews.com, and I put the article in the Ocelli.com chat room, and if you're hearing the podcast later, it'll be in the show notes, a link to this article. So it begins, and this was released yesterday at 4:10 p.m., okay, which... Larry, when were they releasing these documents just real fast, like the actual document release?
Those all went online between 3 and 4 o'clock. I mean, so that release was, yeah.
Yes. So very
real time. Okay. More like, okay, they put something out.
So I'm just to give people an idea here, and this is an important point, although I'm laughing. Okay. You know, effectively, they started releasing documents at about 3 p.m., and I thought they were still releasing stuff because I was catching up, I guess, around the time I went to air last night, or I started producing Jack Blood Show at 6 p.m. It appeared to me as though stuff was still going up. But let's go with Larry Hancock's assessment, and that it was done between 3 and 4 p.m.
East. Oh, no, sorry. No, Chuck, you're correct. It just started between 3 and 4 p.m.
Okay.
Nope. They continued putting out more documents. In fact, we were going, it's kind of like, at the press conference, we were going, well, we can't really say because there appear to be more coming. So don't ask us, you know.
Yeah.
It's still in. The release isn't still in process.
So I was right in thinking, okay, there's still, either way. So these things are still in process at 4, just checking again, 4:18 p.m. Eastern, which is when this story was published. And that means somebody had to write it, too, don't forget. You know, you're assuming. So it was written and published by 4:18 p.m. Eastern time. Anyway, I'll let you draw your own conclusions so I can get to this quickly. And again, I want the overall progress report, Larry, after I get your comments about a few things in this article, okay? So here we go. President Joe Biden's administration released more than 13,000 records of President John F. Kennedy's assassination Thursday. But it fell short of fully complying with the spirit of a 30-year-old law demanding transparency by now. With Thursday's action, about 98% of all documents related to the 1963 killing have now been released, and just 3% of the records remain redacted in whole or in part, according to the National Archives, which controls the John F. Kennedy assassination records collection. I pause from the article. Larry.
Go ahead. I think what they are reporting, quite frankly, is they're reporting the White House memo.
Mm-hmm.
What they've done is they've lifted text from the White House's release, which was just simply parroting, you know, what the White House was told by the various agencies. Mm-hmm. My understanding is, you know, this stuff goes from the agencies through the National Security Council, and the National Security Council briefs the White House. And so I think what that news is just a report of basically – this is what the White House has been told occurred. Mm-hmm. Now, I think it's really important because it also reflects what the White House doesn't know, and what the National Security Council does not know is how this whole records release process works.
Yes.
In terms of that they could make a statement of the way that they did suggest that they feel that all the records collection relating to JFK was complete, that everything anybody whether the HFCA or the ARB, that everything that could have been collected, including things that are in private collections, like with the Kennedy family, with the Robert Kennedy family, church committee transcripts that are actually have to be released by Congress, by the way, not an agency, but by Congress, they don't understand the scope of what's out there that's germane. All that they can do is parrot what the agencies have told them.
Right.
So that's really you can't, you know, it's like, can you say it's untrue? I guess what I would say is seriously uninformed.
Well, see, I can say it's untrue for a couple of reasons, okay? And maybe I'm a little less responsible than Larry. Let's see. Okay. Why do I say it's untrue? Because the characterization that 98% of documents have been released is an absolute fallacy under any standard here. Because it's just not correct. A bunch of things have not been collected that were supposed to have been collected. A, as I said, so that would expand the document collection or the potential base number that you're taking the 98% from to begin with. So mathematically, you have a problem. Secondly, just to point out, in the NBC article, I didn't misread it just now, you have about 98% of all documents related, right? And then in the next sentence, and just three, or no, excuse me, killing of it, same sentence, and just 3% of the records remain redacted. Now, 98 and 3 make 101, do they not? I mean, I'm not a brilliant man necessarily, but I think I can add that together, and 101% is just, a problem here. Okay, so...
Chuck, you don't understand, it's just they've released more than they have.
Fine, okay. But I'm just pointing out here that uninformed is the generous thing you can say. It's the idea that they can represent it this way. But remember, I started in that press conference that those guys held at 5 p.m., so just after this article was released. I asked the first question. And my question was, what percentage of the documents that you expected to be released were released? Rex Bradford did exactly what I wanted him to do, which was tell you in that press conference and tell the rest of the press that this is a fallacy if you think that you can even lay a proper percentage on it. That's it.
NARA doesn't even notice. You notice they're not quoting NARA. It would have been interesting if they reported what NARA, what they're really reporting again is coming from the White House and the agencies.
Mm-hmm.
NARA's view of matters can be quite different. NARA's numbers can be quite different.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? Somebody over there might not be so interested in trying to mislead you and might tell you, look, there's no way of knowing the percentage, which is the short answer for what Rex said. I mean, Rex gave particulars there and very good ones about, listen, there's this going on, there's this going on, and to quantify it is very difficult because, et cetera. Yeah, that's why I kicked it off with this question, because the lead part of the news article is to deceive people and tell them, look, we gave them 98% of what they wanted, and we only held 3%, so we had 101%, and we gave them 98 of it. All right, I'm sorry. Let me continue on with the article, and Larry, I'm not going to do the whole article, but I just want to get to a couple of points here to show people what it is they're being shown. I'm not saying that all of the corporate media lies 101% of the time. Okay, but they are informing people, and they are at best, as Larry said, ill-informed. Okay, so let's move on for a second and see if, well, you know, come on, Chuck, you're being unreasonable. Okay, let's see. The records include, this is back to the article, by the way, the records include more information on accused gunman Lee Harvey Oswald and his time spent in Mexico City. But about 4,300 records remain redacted in part. Okay, my quick pause, 4,300. Again, we know that these quantifications are wrong already, okay? Just we'll continue, though. We'll forgive it. With no record completely blacked out, okay? According to the agency and experts say there's no justification for withholding them to protect national security or intelligence gathering. Let me see. according to the agency and experts say, there's no, okay. And experts, I love how the agency is first off just the agency. And secondly, and experts say, which is a really wide open statement there, which experts and which one said it. And look, I'm not saying I'm an expert, but of course, I'm one of those people that will argue there's absolutely no reason for withholding this stuff. But let's continue on in the article just for one more minute. Okay. We're 59 years, this is in quotes, we're 59 years after President John Kennedy was killed, and there's just no justification for this, said Judge John H. Thunheim, who, from 1994 to 1998, chaired the Assassination Records Review Board that was established under the President John F. Kennedy Assassination Records Collection Act of 1992. And they provide a hyperlink there to the act, okay? Let's see, we'll copy the link. And also throw that in my chat room as well. Just real fast here. Again, I don't want to hold Larry too much longer because, look, I only wanted him for an hour to begin with, and I don't want to belabor this and wear him out. But I think these points are important. Anyway, which Biden voted for when it passed Congress unanimously. Okay, so I'm just going to finish this with this part of it and then turn it back over to Larry, okay? Among the documents that remain largely hidden, 44 related to a shadowy CIA agent, George Ioannidis, and a covert Cuba-related program he ran that came into contact with Lee Harvey Oswald less than 4 months before Kennedy was shot, according to calculations made by JFK researchers with the Mary Farrell Foundation, the nation's largest nonprofit repository of assassination records, which sued the administration to make all the documents public. The foundation says the CIA is withholding most of the records at issue. And, quote, many of those Ioannidis records were never put in the National Archives JFK collection, according to the foundation's lawsuit. So the lion's share of the suspected records were not released Thursday. Last thing here, CIA officials dispute the number of Ioannidis records in their possession, but they confirmed two were scheduled to be released Thursday. Quote, we believe all CIA records substantively related to Mr. Ioannidis were previously released, with only minor redaction, such as CIA employees, and that was all in quotes, and then it says names and locations. Quote, the agency said in a press statement in which it boasted of making tremendous progress in releasing records. And I'll just get to this final quote. We're talking about over 87,000 documents originally included in the JFK Act collection, the agency said. And as of today, CIA has completely disclosed more than 84,000 of those to the public without any redaction. That amounts to about more than 95% of those documents released in full. Okay, again. The numbers game. I love this. They're claiming that they released 95% of what they got. We gave them all the Ioannidis documents, and we know for a fact that that is absolute BS. We know that Morley was just denied in his lawsuit to try and get stuff related to Ioannidis released. You know, Brett Kavanaugh, just before joining the Supreme Court, shot his whole thing down, sided with the agency that harm would be done if Ioannidis related records were released to Mr. Morley. That's my statement. That's not from an article. Okay. Larry. So I'll just turn it over to you, get your comment on this, and if you could, a brief progress report, and then I'll let you go. And I really appreciate your indulgence, your patience, and, of course, your friendship at all times. Go ahead.
And the two or three things I think stand out from our article. This is the first time that I can recall that the news media have at least come to us, come to people like Mary Farrell or Jeff or Rex or whatever, and gotten some input and put it in an article. I mean, mm-hmm. So at least we got a little bit of a rebuttal and forced the CIA to make a rebuttal.
Well, just really quickly, the history of this is quite often we are just listed as conspiracy theorist, kooky author, or sources among the community, the general descriptor, right? Like they said, document experts. There was a couple of general descriptors earlier there. Usually we'd be relegated to that, not the Mary Farrell Organization and an explanation that it has the largest repository of publicly available documents. None of that. But because of the lawsuit, I think, they actually had to note it. Or maybe it is some real progress. I don't know. But I just wanted to point out that generally speaking, they would just say something like, you know, there are conspiracy theorists out there who say this. And then rebut it.
I think it is because of the lawsuit, Chuck. I really do think, you know, that it's, but not only because of the lawsuit, but because we did make the choice, which is, you know, it's a tough choice to make, to go ahead and make an effort to get the press to pay attention to what's in the lawsuit, which means more, I think, general press people are aware of some of the issues and are, if you will, our charges, mm-hmm. than they were before. So they're really, most of the stories that weren't just pure repeating of the White House release do have some disclaimers and do have a little bit of rebuttal in them or open issues in them that we haven't seen before. And I think it's the fact that a lot of the press was responsive to at least ask some questions because there was a lawsuit in play, so I think that helped.
Right.
The other thing that jumps out at me, I think, is fascinating because it's almost like the CIA, for the first time, has had to try to defend itself by throwing these numbers up against the wall.
Right.
You know, toward the end of what you read, it's like, oh, they're going to beat us to death with numbers. That's kind of new. They haven't been on the defense before,
mm-hmm.
but particularly their comment so far, I know of half a dozen people who have been searching hour by hour for anything about Oswald and Mexico City, and we found nothing.
Right.
So I don't know where that statement came from. I do know that there was a teaser planted with certain press people about, you know, the releases might show a failure of the CIA in Mexico City to do some things that might have led to a warning about it. But none of that has come forth. I've seen one document relating to Mexico City, and that's the one I mentioned earlier in the show, which is a great document. It's a sit rep,
right,
talking about surveillance. It does not mention Oswald.
Mm-hmm.
But absolutely, the documents that you would expect to be there, and so it's almost like there seems to be some kind of a disconnect within the agency that, oh, well, we're releasing documents about Oswald in Mexico City. No, you're not. You're releasing documents about Mexico City, so where are the documents on Oswald in Mexico City?
Well, and Larry didn't know I was going to bring this up, but quite frankly, my last little zinger for tonight was going to be, look, there was a preview that seemed to be out there, and I don't know if it's still out there, but I heard it through some of the talking heads on just listening to audio feeds about the possibility of this release, and it wasn't very widespread, but in a few corners, there was this idea that there would be information coming related to this, and it was strange because I had never seen before, you call it a teaser. I'd never seen that before, and like you, I don't see it in here yet. I mean, perhaps it's buried in there somewhere, but I don't even see what they could be referring to, you know, whether it's revelatory or not, whether it actually reveals some new information or not. I don't know because I haven't seen it yet. Like you said, where is the information on Oswald directly? That's new or that, you know, points to the Mexico City is very important. But where is it? I'm still looking for it. And like I said, smarter people than myself who are much more focused on it. Yeah.
The same thing goes for Joannides, Chuck. The thing is that their statement is so easily deconstructed. I mean, mm-hmm. so far we've seen two documents on Joannides, both of which are re-releases of documents that were already out there. They're not new. One is his performance, a couple of his performance reports, which are kind of interesting because they do confirm that he was in charge of propaganda and political action, which really goes to the point of that he would be involved with Oswald from an operational standpoint. But none of the other reports, like the man had to write reports every week. Where are his reports? The only reports on Joannides are reports from other people. That's where are Joannides' reports?
That's right.
So they're playing a game. They can shuffle this stuff past and, you know, tell a story, but it's not a story that's convincing once you have a chance to deconstruct it. And hopefully we've had more of a chance than normal. And there are still people going on mainstream news with some of the deconstruction that may help us. I know that there is some hope that we might be able to get a congressional oversight committee interested in forcing the CIA to answer some of these questions. But quite frankly, it brings up the point that no matter how well we do on document releases, we can't answer some of the questions if the CIA did away with the documents or nobody can find them or if there really are holes in their data. You need an investigation to reveal that sort of point. You mentioned one other thing I wanted to point out. The news story talks about the collection as if it were a finite thing. And it's not. It's right. Not like there was a given number at a given point in time. We released all of those, whatever number it is. Well, what about all of those documents that were identified by the ARB or the HSCA that were relevant to the JFK that aren't in the collection? I'm sorry, your number is irrelevant because the collection doesn't define the universe.
Right. And the other thing to keep in mind here, just I know it's a very minor issue to some people, but the idea that they have any way of knowing what could potentially be in private hands that could count as assassination records is laughable. Nobody knows that. I don't think anybody could put an exact number on. There could be an archive sitting somewhere. There could be films sitting somewhere that are unknown at this time in private hands that we don't. I mean, and I'm just pointing out really easy to explain things, but there's a ton of things that could be out there. There is no way to lay your hands on. I know there's only 10,000 things left. I know there's only 4,000 things left. Even with that, and I know, you know, private hands might not be as important or relevant to some people, but either way, it's yet another argument for you don't know what 100% represents. So therefore, to put a percentage on it, you're lying. You're lying. I know you said it's uninformed, and it is uninformed if you trust somebody who tells you that they know this to begin with, and you then parrot it. Yes, but the problem is that at some point somebody's lying, because anybody who understands this recognizes. And I tried to explain it last night on the show. Maybe I didn't do as good a job as Larry just did, but I tried to explain last night. There's no way of knowing what the size of this really could be or should be.
We have leads. I mean, we know something critically important would be William Manchester's interviews with the family.
Right.
What RFK really told him in confidence.
That's right.
What Jackie told him in confidence. Manchester did an extensive investigation with principals in this immediately after the assassination, and it's not available to us.
That's right.
And won't be available to us. The ARB was not able to force the collection. Congress. So there are things that are known to exist that are in the, obviously in the relevant universe. It would be absolutely foolish to say they would not be relevant to the assassination, that are out there that, you know, are not in the collection yet.
Right. And then the final thing that brought up a little bit of controversy during yesterday's press conference, which is relevant as well, is that the IRS records were collected but cannot be released. They are in the collection, but cannot be released, right? Now, I'm not saying that that's the only issue, and there was a little bit of an argument as to whether the tax law needed to be changed or the law needed to be amended, or is this, you know, two possible solutions to it. Nonetheless, it stands that the IRS records were collected and can't be released, okay? So this is the current status. And I imagine, maybe I'm wrong, but I imagine there's a couple other things like that, which we may or may not know about, that maybe could have been collected or were even collected, that that are just simply not available as well. So this is not the hard, fast, simple answer that they're trying to present in this article, is my overall point. Does it stand, Larry Hancock, and is there anything else you want to say before I let you go? Again, your patience and me taking you an hour and a half now through this, I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's a complex subject. I have no problem with that. I think we've covered it very well. I wish we could, you know, if I could just get every reporter in the room for an hour and make them understand what we just talked about so that they could be informed and could help in the process. But in truth, I hate to say this, but to sum it up, I mean, the CIA has always believed from its very first years that it could manage the media, that if it crafted its story well enough, that, you know, managing the media was part of psychological warfare, which is not a term they normally use, but it is a truth that they feel that they can construct stories to manage the media. Mm-hmm. And I think they continue to do that. It's pretty much just in their DNA by now, and they continue to do it regardless who has the job. It's just like, here's what we do. Right. And here we go again.
Well, and it has been very successful, but not quite as absolutely successful as some people would characterize it as, and as I think they believe it is. It's not quite perfect, but it does have a tremendous amount of influence on the general public, their interest, etc. But still, it stands as a standard operating procedure. They will steer the narrative in the media, and they're clearly still doing it 6 decades later. Unless I'm again counting wrong, but it appears as though, you know, when I'm 101% correct about something, I want to point it out. You've
got to be as good as they are.
Larry Hancock, again, really appreciate your time. I know you're going to be blogging on this. I know you're going to continue to dig. So am I. We're all going to do this. And I hope that there will be a better collective effort to go on. But again, my experience in the past tells me a little something different. But who knows? Things are always possible when change is the only thing that is a guarantee in the universe. So maybe we'll see enough of a cooperative effort that something could be accomplished here. But overall, the progress report on this and the circumstance with which we're dealing with regarding the releases and all that is no massive, you know, smoking gun. No, here's the thing. But hopefully we can continue to make some progress. You think that's a fair enough prognosis, if you will?
I certainly think so.
Okay. Larry-Hancock.com. Go over there. Anything else you want to tell people about, Larry, or are we just going to continue this discussion? By the way, when am I going to get you back again? I know the Christmas season is coming or is here, but, you know.
Oh, I think after Christmas. Yeah, I think we ought to be able to, and we should know for sure what is and is not there after Christmas. I think we'll have that'll be enough time to see if they've actually, you know, do we have something on Oswald, Mexico City, or don't we?
Right.
You know, some of those questions we'll answer by that time.
Well, exactly. Are you coming back on the 29th, or are we skipping until the new year?
The 29th looks possible now. Yeah, let's plan on that.
All right. So you know what we'll do? We'll revisit this on the 29th for Larry Hancock in his regular spot, which I'm so, so grateful that he has been able to do a lot more of those shows. I mean, we're probably going to slow down in the new year a little bit, give Larry a little bit more of a break. But, I mean, every time I turn around, there's something else I want to talk to you about, whether it's, you know, the circumstance in Ukraine or this JFK documents release or et cetera, because again, sober analysis, a look at these situations, the behavior of the national security state, they're all relevant through this, and we are seeing it in real time, exactly how it is they'll continue to steer a story, even six decades later. So, Larry Hancock, thanks for doing this special with me on a Friday, and I'm sorry I took you an extra half hour, but I think we did a service for those that maybe wouldn't have considered all this in the past. Thank you, sir.
Hope so. Good to be back, Chuck. Thanks.
Absolutely, guys. So I'm done for the week, and there's going to be a lot of pods released over the weekend. So in the meantime, I am Emilio Celli. All of you are indeed the effect. Good night.